Okay, we'll start with the Mishnah on Kuf Lamed Vav and Aleph. The Mishnah says a kotev nechasav livanav. First, reader wants to gift his property to his children. This is not a shechiv meirah, but rather someone who basically is writing up a will of sorts. Tzerech sheyichtov meyom ulaachar mita. He has to gift it in a manner by which part of the kinyan takes effect immediately, and that there's some sort of residual that will only take effect after he dies. So the trigger for the complete gifting of the property happens at death, but at least the kinyan, or the formal part of the kinyan, takes place while he's alive. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, because otherwise, we had the problem that we mentioned yesterday, which is that you can't have shtar, you can't have a kinyan, achar mita. So it has to be something that's already effective prior to that point in time. Rabbi Yossi Omer, enu tzarich. You don't need that at all. And the Gemara will discuss why Rabbi Yossi thinks that it's unnecessary. Hakotev nechazav livno, lachar moto. So now, if someone does, for instance, let's say, according to Rabbi Yehuda, does it through mayom alachamita, does successfully gift his child property using the term mayom alachamita. So then, av, eno yacholim kor, mipnei shehen ktuvim leben. The father now does not have sufficient control over the property because he's already gifted it to his child. Baben, eno yacholim kor, mipnei shehen brishut av. On the other hand, the son can't sell it because he doesn't have full control, because the father still has some sort of residual ownership or control of the property. So now, macharav, mchurim achimot. So what they can't sell is what they do own. So the father can sell his rights in the property until his death. So if he sells them, that's exactly what he sold it for. He sold it for the rights to the property until he dies. Macharav ben, on the other hand, if the son sells it, the son doesn't have any ownership until the father dies. So basically what he's done, he's sold it forward, he sold whatever he will receive when his father passes away, that he has sold. So what comes out from the Mishnah...
It's just that both of them can sell it.
Right, they both can sell it, but what they are selling is based on what happens at that point in time. Right, they have a division of which we've seen all the way along, which is that every piece of property has the principal, the underlying property, and then there is the leasehold, right? The usage of the property or the payrot of the property. So what the child owns is basically the principal of the property. He owns the underlying gufa karka. What his father has retained is the payrot, the leasehold on the property. His father is allowed to use the property, or any output from the property until he dies belongs to the father. As soon as the father passes away, then it all passes to the son. But his rights or his principle is already granted to the son at that point in time, which means that the father can't change that. If he goes and gifts it to someone else or tries to sell it, he's unable to do so because the son has already taken possession of the principle of the property.
This is as matana,
right? Right. He has to, it's a bari who's granting it, so he's doing a derech matana, right? Shon of Mayom Alachamita is only necessary when you're doing a matana. Right? By Yerusha, you won't need that because that's automatic. Yerusha only happens, it's triggered by death. Right? So now, L'chi Kotav Mayom Alachamita, my hobby. What's the benefit of saying Mayom Alachamita? What does that do for you? Hatznan, we have a Mishnah, Mayom Alachamita, get, veino get. If someone grants a get and says that the get is effective, Mayom Alachamita. Right? The problem with the get, or why would someone give a get? Person gives a get in order to prevent his wife from having to go through Ivum or Chalitza. Now, obviously he wants to be married to his wife until he dies. So he really wants the get to be effective before his death or at his death. That would really what he want to happen. Problem is, ain't get l'achamita. You can't have a get that's effective after he dies. So here an individual says, Mayom l'achamita, get veno get. So Gemara says that it's a safek get. Vimate, and when he passes away, chuletzit v'lo mitya bemet. She has to do chalitza, and doesn't do yibum, because we have a safek here, whether she's divorced or not divorced.
Okay.
Right, so hatam.
She's also to the
abam, she's also to the chutzala, she's also to the shuk, she needs to get chalitza. Right, it didn't benefit, but on the other hand, it created a situation where you have a safek get. So how come by get, when we use mayom alachamita, we say there's a safek get? Yet over here in our Mishnah, when you use the Lashon according to Yehuda, Miyom Lachamita, you create a full-fledged Kinyan, and we just have what we call a division of responsibility or division of ownership, which is that the son gets the underlying principal ownership in the property, and the father owns the leasehold, he owns the payrot of the output from the property. So how come by a gift it's working, the Lashon is working, And by a get, the Lashon is not working. So that Gemara says, Hotam, it's exactly that. Misfekalan, itano havai, ichazor havai. But the case of a get, we don't know why he said the achar mita. There are two possibilities of why he said the achar mita. One possibility is that he made it a condition of the get. The get is effective today when I die. So that means that the get's effective from this moment, and just the trigger for the get is when I die. That would be a tnai, a condition in the get. The other possibility is, he's a chazara. He's reversing his position. He originally wants to grant the gift me'ayom. I mean, not the gift, the get, me'ayom. And then he says, achamita, and you know what, really, I'd rather have it have achamita. So the safek here, in that case, the get's not effective whatsoever, because the only time the get goes effective is after mita, and that's not effective get. But get, excuse me, there are only two choices. Right? This is, you either are divorced or you're not divorced. I mean, there's no, in-between category, which is you can have partial get, right? Or you can have a partial divorce, partial marriage. That doesn't exist. Right? You either are or you are not married. You either are divorced or not divorced. You can't create a situation when you have this, quasi-married state or quasi-divorced state. What that called is a suffix. If you have a suffix like that, then it's a get, venu get, that creates a problem for you. That is not true when it comes to, over here, of a hocha, hochi kamerle, gufa koni miayom, peira lachamita. Over here, because property can be divided into different ownerships, meaning that we've seen this throughout the Masechta, which is that there are two different ownerships in any given property. There is the leasehold, which is the person who has the rights to the output of the property or work the property or anything that the property produces. That's one ownership right. The other ownership right is the underlying property, owning the principal or getting the right, whoever is collecting the rent or the lease payments, whatever it is, someone owns can own the underlying property. So since you can separate the ownership, you can create partial ownership, that's what we will do. We can interpret as being a division of ownership, where one person will own the leasehold, the other one will learn the principal, and we can make sense out of the statement, which is not true by a get. So therefore the outcome, or the halachic outcome, will be different. In the case of get, it's a safek. We don't know what he said. On the other hand, here, by dine mamononos, when it's a gift, we can interpret what he says to make something that's logical. Me'ayom u'lachamita. Me'ayom, you get the principal. Me'lachamita, you also get the payrot. And since we can make sense out of a statement, that's what we're going to do with the statement, and therefore you will come out with a right, different conclusion here versus what you get by get.
The problem with get over there is really the zakon, so it's assuming that you should be able to get around that and actually make a valid get like that by clarifying.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You could.
And it would actually work.
Yes. If you say, me ayom, and it only goes effective, lachamita.
Yeah, I really mean that it's...
Today, that retroactively. Today.
No, I'm not retracting it, I'm just saying that that's...
Okay. It would work fine. The problem with that is that, what's her state? Which is the Gemara we discussed in other places, what's the state of their marriage in between? Right?
I'm afraid
she's not married to her, so then you have the whole that time in between they can't live together. I mean, it creates a huge problem. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Einu Tzarich, he doesn't need it. So Rabba Bar Avua Chalash, a sick, got weak. Al Gabe Rav Huna Rav Nachman. Rav Huna Rav Nachman came to visit him, came to see him. Amarlei Rav Huna the Rav Nachman. Rav Huna says to Rav Nachman, listen, by mine halacha Rabbi Yossi, oin halacha Rabbi Yossi. Says, ask him. You know, in our Mishnah, is the halacha like Rabbi Yossi or is it like Rabbi Yehuda? Yeah, please ask, while we're in there, ask Rabbi about Rav Huna. So Amalei, so Rav Nachman says back to Rav Huna, listen, Tamei Rabbi Yossi lo yadana, halacha yibayimine? Says, I don't even know why Rabbi Yossi has this position. I'm going to ask him whether the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. I don't even understand Rabbi Yossi. If I don't understand Rabbi Yossi, how can I ask him whether the halacha is like it? So Amalei, so Rav Huna says back to him, says, no, listen, at bayimine, yalacha yilo. You ask him whether the halacha is not, bitamei ana amina lacha. I will tell you the reason. I know the reason of Rabbi Yossi. So you just find out what the halacha is, and I'll tell you why the halacha is this way. So by mine, so that's what it did. Rav Nachman asked Rabbi Bar Avua, what's halacha? Amalei, hochi amarav, this is what I heard from Rav, halacha ki Rabbi Yossi. The halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. So batar nafku. Of course, after they left, Rav Nachman turns to Rav Huna and says, Amalei, hainu taima. Say Rav Huna tells, I mean Rav Nachman goes, listen, you told me, you tell me the reason, what is it? So he says, Amalei, Rav Huna says to him, I know Tamei de Rabbi Yossi. This is the reason by Rabbi Yossi, Damar, Zmano Shashtar Mochiach Alav. That it's basically, there's a date in the shtar. The only reason to have a date in the shtar, if there's some value to the dating of the shtar. If the Kinyan is only effective, the Achar Mita, then why do you need a date in the shtar? The date in the shtar is absolutely meaningless because there is no effectiveness in the kinyan. So the kinyan, if it only takes place at a later time, then the fact that your date preceded someone else's date has no bearing because you didn't take control of the property. You didn't get anything in the property. The only time you get something in the property is much later on. So it must be that the fact that you dated the shtar is indicative that you want something to happen now. You want something to be effective immediately. And the only way that can happen is if you take a kinyan in the property, or a kinyan aguf, right now. So even though you don't have a lashon mi'aliyom al-achar mita, even if you leave out the mi'ayom part, the date itself is indicative that it must be mi'ayom. Otherwise, there's no purpose to the dates. So that's the position of Rabbi Yossi. The zmanu shel shtar mochiach alav. The zmanu shtar grants it.
Towards...
I don't really know. My assumption is right. I assume there was some sort of relationship issue that either Rav Nachman was closer to Rabbi Baravuna or Itayin Amihachi. Rabbi Yossi Omer Einu Tzarich Mipnei Shizmano Shostar Mochiach Alav. So we have an explicit statement in the Brisa of Rabbi Yossi's reason why he disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda is because of the dating of the shtar is indicative of Mi'ayom, and therefore you don't need an explicit lashon of Mi'ayom.
No, the reason is the shtar. I don't need the date on the shtar is show that the shtar starts from today. But also,
if you want to be machshish today, or different things, so you have to know when the shtar. So you're making a very good point, which is there's a difference between a shtar we've seen before, what's called the shtar akna, and a shtar raya. It's the difference. If the shtar is generating a kinyan, then it makes a lot of sense. But if a shtar is simply for a raya, then the date has. It's not necessarily an issue. Right, it's not the effect. They're just telling you that this event took place. And this is when it took place, in case you need evidence later on. So that's the Gemara is going to make your distinction right now, which is, Bayi minei Rava mi Rav Nachman. Rava asks Rav Nachman. So you see here, Rav Nachman, who asked about the Loch is like Rabbi Yossi. And Rav Hun explained him the reason. So Rav Nachman now is holding like Rabbi Yossi. So now Rava comes to Rav Nachman and says to him, Ba'akno amahu. When it says shtar kinyan, what's the din? Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees by a shtar akna, right, that you don't need a date. You don't need to put hayom al-achamita in it. Because in a shtar akna, it's the date has to be there because of the validity of the kinyan. You need to know what date the kinyan took place. There's a importance in the dating itself. So here Rav Nachman tells you, and exactly David, what you're suggesting is that by shtar akna, the date is the effective date of the kinyan, and therefore the date must mean that there's some value to there being a date. What does that mean? You don't have to say meyom achamita because it's happening today. Right, but the shtar, right? The shtar, you can create it. Well, you have to create the kinyan two ways. One way of creating the kinyan is through the shtar. The other way to create a kinyan is through a physical kinyan that is evidenced by edim. In that case, the shtar is written as shtar raya, so that's not called a shtar hakna. Shtar hakna is that the shtar is the right is the kinyan itself, or is generating the change in ownership. Right over here, but now Rapapi Amar Ika Aknete de Tzarich Vika Neta de Lo Tzarich. But Papi says, no, there's certain shtarot akna that do require it, and there's certain shtarot akna that don't require me'ayom al-achamita. That is the differentiate. It's a very difficult differentiation. I will go through the Rishonim with you. I'm still not sure it's so easy to understand. He says, akne'ei v'kinyana minei lo tzarich. If the lashon of the shtar was written akne'ei and then kinyana minei, then you don't need it. Kinyana minei v'akne'ei tzarich. In that case, you do need it. Now, the Rashbam explains, the Rashbam learns this as being that in the shtar itself, there are actually two times you write the word kinyan in the shtar. There's once in the, what's it called, the token for the shtar, or the main body of the shtar. And then there's a requirement, we're going to see later on, that you have to, in the last line, shitachron of the shtar, you have to repeat the highlights of the shtar in the last line before the edim sign. So the Rashbam claims that there's one akna that's mentioned earlier on, and then one akna that's mentioned in the last repeated line, that summary line at the end. So it depends which way it's written. If the first statement, meaning the early part of the shtar, says akniye, and then the second shtar says v'kinyana minei, right, then you don't need it. Why? Because then it sounds like there was two forms of kinyan here. There was two kinyan. Akniye, I granted it to him. I gave him a kinyan here. And then the edim testify, right, that we took possession of it from him on behalf of the buyer. So therefore, it's almost like there's an extraneous kinyan here. There's one kinyan where he says, right, that he granted it to the buyer. And the second lashon sounds like it's the Edim taking on behalf of the buyer, they made a kinyan on it. So since there's two kinyanim here, the extra kinyan is not meaningful. Since there's no extra, the extra kinyan is not meaningful, it must be it's coming to make it effective today. So therefore, when it has those two kinyanim in it, it's effective immediately because of this extra kinyan. On the other hand, if you write it, kinyan amine vakne, if the tokiv of the shar says kinyan amine, that the edim took it, right, from him, we took a kinyan from him on behalf of the buyer, and then it says vakne in the conclusion, it's just come to tell you what happened. It's just a perush of the milim. I mean, that how did the, right, how did the edim take effective, or how did they get kinyan here? Akne amine, that they grant, he granted it to them, he gave it to them. So in that case, it's an explanation of what happened earlier in the shtar versus this other case where it's a separate kinyan in the shtar. That's the way the Rashbam explains it. And therefore he says that in one case you won't need you won't need mayom olach amita. The other case you will need mayom olach amita. So now, that's one explanation. Tosos disagrees, although Tosos does not offer another interpretation. Tosos simply says that we know from the Gemara later on that you're not allowed to learn anything from the last line of the Shtar. Right? It says, Ein lemeidim shita achrona. The shita achrona is just a summary. There's nothing in the summary that could tell you anything about the Shtar that shouldn't already be in the Shtar. There can't be any new information in this because it's simply a repeat, a summary of what was before. So he says, I don't understand the Rashbam's pshat because now, according to Rashbam, you're actually learning something from the shita achrona. It's not mochiach. In the second case where you don't get a kantan, then it's mochiach, what happened before. But in the other case, he's saying that there were two formal kinyanim. One where you give it to the buyer, one you give it to the edim. So that is something new. New information. The Tosfos himself does not explain what he thinks the answer is. The Rashbam rejects the pshat in his Perush. And that pshat is found in the Rabbeinu Gershom. Obviously it was in the Gaonim beforehand. And the Rashbam rejected it. And that is in the Shtar itself, it's written a lashon in a row. Akne v'kinyan amine. That not that they're in separate places in the Shtar, but actually that double lashon is written in the Shtar. And depending on the order, it'll make a difference. And that's what the Rabbeinu Gershom, I'll read it to you. Now he says, Akne. Shenat nolo, he gave it to him. Vishuv v'kinyan amine. And then again, he took a kinyan from him. Mashma shetala ha-matana b'kinyan. Sounds like he made the matana dependent on the kinyan. Because he says, Akniye, I granted him, v'kinyan amine. And he took the kinyan. That's what generated the kinyan over here. Klomar, ki heichet kinyan me'achayim, matana nami me'achayim. That just like the kinyan now is effective, right now, because the kinyan's done right in front of us, so too the gift is effective right now. So that's what he's saying. Akniye, I granted it to him, right? Pow, bikinyan. Just the way the kinyan is done now, so too I granted him now. Ikatav achi lo tzarech lemichtav meayom. If he doesn't say this, he doesn't write meayom. Aval ikatav ba bikinyan amine v'akniye. If he writes it the other way around, kinyan amine, he made a kinyan, and then akniye, I'll grant it to him as a gift. Then it's shetala kinyan b'matana. Works the other way around. When will the gift be effective? The gift he wants to be effective b'mita. She says, "V'kinyan amine was the first, so that is what? That means that the gift is effective at mita, and the kinyan will be effective at the same time, which means the kinyan is effective achar mita. The kinyan is effective achar mita, mashma da'ata achar kinyan aita meta amtana. That the matana was afterwards. Ilokot of lei meyom, habi mashma the matana hayal achar mita. Sounds like the matana, or the gift, is after mita. Vein shtar achar mita. You can't create the kinyan after mita. So Rabbeinu Gershom says the lashon. Right, it's not effective whatsoever, right. So that's why you need me'om al-achita to make it effective. But his basic point is, it depends what is governing here. Is it the gift that is governing, or is it the kinyan? If the kinyan governs, the kinyan has to be done before mita. It's done right now in front of us. So if the kinyan governs, then the gift will be drawn with the kinyan, and we know it's effective today. On the other hand, if it's the gift that is governing, the gift we know he wants to be effective only lachar mita. Because he says, lachar mita. He doesn't have the word me'om there. And therefore, if the gift's after and what's governing, then the kinyan he also thinks will happen after mita. Problem is that a kinyan lachar mita doesn't work, and therefore there's no gift over here. That's the way the Rabbeinu Gershom learns. Again, I don't think either one is so simple to understand. I'm giving you what the Rishonim say. In the end, we're going to reject this. We don't accept this halacha. So matkiv la rav chinam isura mi ika midei d'ana lo yadina. Is there such a thing that we don't know? I mean, the chachamim don't know. V'safri yadai, and the sofrim know about it. Meaning, how come we don't know about this distinction between akine and kinyana? I mean, that the sofrim are writing with this type of embedded understanding of the shtarot that we have no idea about. How could it be? Shaluno l'sifrei d'rabbi v'yodei. We asked the sofrim of Abaye, and they knew this distinction. L'sifrei d'rabbi v'yodei. And we asked the sofrim of Rav, and they also knew this distinction. But he wasn't willing, or wasn't comfortable with accepting the fact that the Sofrim had generated this distinction. That wasn't something that was a halachic distinction.
With the Rabbanim
didn't know about this, and all of a sudden the Sofrim came up with some new way to avoid or to get around the problem. Rabbanu Breda Rav Yeshua Amar Ben Akniyei V'Kinyana Minei Ben Kinyana Minei V'Akinei Lo Tzarich. So Rabbanu Breda Rav Yeshua says it doesn't matter which way you write it. We're indifferent between them. You don't need Me'yom L'Achamita because there's a Kinyan and there's a date in the Shtar. This is just like Rav Nachman, right? When Bayi Rav Mirav Nachman, who says you don't need it. When it's a Shtar Kna, you don't need it. Doesn't matter how the Shtar Kna is written. You don't need it because you have a date and you have a Shtar Kna, which means that you want it to be effective today. There's a Kinyan and an effective date. That means today. Ubeduchran pitgamei dave ba'anpano plige. Right, so where do they argue, or where is the machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi? Right, the is an eshtar raya. Says ubeduchran pitgamei dave ba'anpano plige. Right, and this incident or this kinyan or this took place in front of us. That is what a shtar raya. The edim are simply testifying to the fact that something happened. The kinyan was done effectively by someone else. The question now is, when they have the shtar raya, right? Where is, do you have to have miyom achamita or not in the shtar raya? So, Amar Rav Kahana, Amrit al the shmaita kamei de Rav Zvid min Arda. Kahana says, I told over this whole memra in front of Rav Zvid min Arda. Amli atun hocham et nitunla. Says, you have the whole incident laid out this way. We had the incident like this. Amar Rav Nachman. Instead of being Rava's questioning Rav Nachman, rather it's a statement from Rava in the name of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman, Bakna ain't Sarich. When it comes to a shtar kna, you don't need it at all. Ben Akneye Kinyana Mine, Ben Kinyana Mine Vakne, Lo Tzarich. Where do they argue? Beduchran Pitkamei Dahavu Bampana Plige. They only argue about a shtar raya. That's where the Machlokas Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehudah comes up, is in this issue of a shtar raya, whether you need Me'yom Lachamita or you don't need Me'yom Lachamita, to indicate what the intent of the Kinyan was before. Right? So you need that in the shtar raya. But otherwise, by shtar Kinyan, everybody agrees the dating of the shtar tells you that there must be something implemented now, and there's a kinyan in front of us and a date that means the effective date is today, and it's the equivalent of as if you said me'ayom. Now, who is the halacha like over here? It's the third line down in the Rishbam. He says, "V'achi hil chazak Rabbi Yossi, lachazak Rabbi Yossi, tim katab lachamita kana, afgadu lo katab me'ayom. Even though you never wrote me'ayom, you are kuneh." Daham Rav halacha Rabbi Yossi. That's exactly what you just quoted, right? Rav says halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Afagav damar repair kamargarish. Wow, what about Bagitin? Itkin Rabbi Gitin, min yomad nan, lafuke mid Rabbi Yossi. Damar zvanush shtar mochichalav. Even though Rav himself, by Gitin, says that we have to put a date, we have to, not only, even though there's a date in the shtar ket, that you still have to write me'ayom. You have to say from today. So how come by Gitin, Rav says me'ayom? Over here, he says you don't need me'ayom, is in Rabbi Yossi. So if you skip down one line from there, it's one more line down. Itlan the Meimar. By a get, there is no formal kinyan by a getisha. Therefore, Rav extended or made it more definitive in the get. Because the chumra d'arayot, he wanted to be written to be make it absolutely clear that it says me'ayom in the get. Even though technically the date is mochiach alav, nevertheless, since there's no formal kinyan over there, he wanted to make sure that it was absolutely clear that the get is effective me'ayom. Because of chumra d'arayot. Aval gabei memona, comes to have hilchos memona, it's halach Rabbi Yossi. The halach is like Rabbi Yossi, that the what? The date of the shtar is mochiach alav. Ki yesh lamar. Ki lo amar rav halach Rabbi Yossi, yelo b'shtar sheyesh bo kinyan. Right, so when Rav says, right, when Rav says, "Glom Rav, Aloch Rabbi Yossi, El Bishtar Sheish Bo Kinyan," right, that you can't say that Rav doesn't say that the Aloch is like Rabbi Yossi when there's Bishtar Bo Kinyan. He says, "Listen, Ve'ra'inu b'divrei Agonim Zal, Shamru Hachin Hige b'Metivta k'Rabbi Yehuda." Then yeshivas were all nohei k'Rabbi Yehuda. Afilu b'Mamon, even b'Mamon k'Tachanat Rav b'Gitin, just like the way Rav was talking about Gitin to write me Ayom, we too by Mamon also do me Ayom. And we are nohag like Rabbi Yehuda. So now, why is this? V'ilu, listen to this. V'ilu ita kabbalah b'yadam ki halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda. If the halacha was really like Rabbi Yehuda, lo yaminichim halacha mafarshinim minhag. How come all the gonim say we're nohag like Rabbi Yehuda? Why don't they just say halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda? Must be that the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Nevertheless, they are nohag ki Rabbi Yehuda. So that's his point. V'yesh lomar, Kema de chazud the sugya de shmaita the command Rabbi Yehuda. That the sugya coming up all follows Rabbi Yehuda. Nagu kavate. Right, so therefore there are no egg like him. I mean that Ein Ochanami the loch is like Rabbi Yossi, but the Gemara seems to be leaning in favor of Rabbi Yehuda in the upcoming sugya, and seems to run the sugya according to Rabbi Yehuda. So then, Kin Perish Rabbeinu Hanan Gaon. That's the way Rabbi Hanan explained it. Vitvos de Rabbi Yossi gabi mamon. Rabbi Yossi is the loch is like him mamon. Arab Nachman ol chosel kavate b'dinei. Hu d'bay mi rabba baravua. So Rabbi Nachman, who we pass on like when it comes to dinim, asks Rabbi Yehuda, almost really the Rabbi Nachman achi. Must be the Rabbi Nachman holds it, holds that way, or he paskins that way. So he says, in the end, the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, and in Dinei Mamonos, and by get, we have the halacha of Rab, so you have to write me Ayom in a get, but by Mamonos, the din is clearly like Rabbi Yossi, but nevertheless, the Minhag Am is still to do it like Rabbi Yehuda, and write me Ayom, Achamita, the Rab Chamilso, or just to make sure that it's all clear in the get. So the next Gemara here, Kotev Nechasav, Livno Lachar Moto. So this is the second half of the Mishnah, how it works that the principal and the perot are separated. Itmar Machara ben Bechaya Av. If the son sells it while the father is still alive, so he's selling forward the principal that will come into his possession later on. Umeita ben Bechaya Av. But then the son predeceases his father. So from the Gemara's question, you know that in all the other cases it doesn't matter, which is if the father sells, for instance, the perot that belong to the property, and the at that point there are two possibilities. Either the father dies, or the father dies in the, at the end of the sale and it reverts to the son, or if the son predeceases the father, still all the father sold were the right to the payroll till he dies. So when he dies, those payroll will come back into the estate somehow. We'll have to deal with that in a second. Now, right, we'll see what exactly happens. It's a separate machlokes rishonim here. The other side is when the son sells it. When the son sells it, he's selling the principal for it. If the father dies before him, there's no question, the sale goes through and the owner gets it. The question which the Gemara is asking, which is this one case where the Gemara has a problem, is what happens when the son predeceases the father, after he's gifted him the principal, son predeceases the father and he sold it forward. Now, does the buyer get this or not? Does he get the principal or not? Does he get it? After the father dies, does he get it? So it's a machlokas. Right, the son never took possession of it. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lo kana lokeach. Rabbi Yochanan says the lokeach does not get. Rish Lakish Amar kana lokeach. Rish Lakish says the lokeach does get it. Rabbi Yochanan Amar lo kana lokeach, kinyan peirot, kinyan aguf dami. Rabbi Yochanan says that the lokeach never gets it because a kinyan peirot has the effectiveness of a kinyan aguf. That a leasehold on the property makes you a somewhat effective owner of the property. We'll have to see what that means in a second. Because so let's look at what we have here.
We had some of this before.
Right. The Gemara is going to quote it right away. What's the problem here? We have Kenyan Perot. If you own a leasehold in a property, what do you own? Do you simply own the leasehold in the property and that's it? And nothing more? Nothing less? Nothing more? You just get the output of the property. You can work the property. You have the right to work it. But in the Gufa guy, the Prince of the Karka, you have no rights and you have nothing. Or do we say that when you have a kinyan peirot, that grants you some right in the property, some right of ownership? Either it weakens the right of the principal owner because you have some rights to it, meaning basically you own the property for its output. So you the karka is meshuba to you for its output, and therefore you have some form of ownership in the principal property. Or you could even say that kinyan peirot grants you a kinyan aguf when there's nothing else blocking you. When nobody else is blocking you from taking a kinyan aguf, you will get the kinyan aguf because you have one problem here. What happens if you believe kinyan peirot kinyan aguf dami? How does the son ever get the property in any case? Meaning that if the father always has a kinyan peirot there, that means that the son never really got full control over the property, and he can't sell it forward, and he can't own it because it's always still with the father. He never gets it. So how come in one case, basically what Rabbi Yochanan says, if the father predeceases the son gets the property. Yet, when the son predeceases the father, he doesn't get the property. Why? Rabbi Yochanan's business is kinyan peirot, kinyan aguf dami, which means that the son never had ownership over the property. Because if the father always has a kinyan peirot, he has a kinyan aguf. If he has a kinyan aguf, the son has nothing. If the son has nothing, that means that whatever he gifted him didn't work. Because the gift only becomes effective after death, and there's no such thing as a gift after death. So you have to separate somehow between when the son is there and when the son is not there. And that's exactly what the Rashbam does. The Rashbam says, well listen, it depends on the situation. If the son is always there, then there is some form of kinyan aguf that the son has. The father, because of his kinyan aperot, also has some ownership in there, or whatever form of ownership. But the son's ownership of the principal and being around blocks, right, the father from taking full ownership over the principal. But it means that he has some effective ownership there. Not complete, but some effective ownership. Therefore, if he sells it forward, when eventually his father dies, the entire ownership comes to him, and then it reverts to the lokeach. On the other hand, if he sells it forward, and then he deceases his father, his kinyan aguf, which blocked the father's kinyan aperot, disappears now all of a sudden. He died. And when he dies, now the gift to the son, which who owned the principal, he's gone. And now what happens? The father takes effective control over the entirety of the property. Now the father dies, and the lokeach shows up and says, I want my property. The father says, listen, he sold you something he never owned. The only way he could have sold you was if I died first. If I died first, then at some point, the property comes into the entirety of the control of the son, and that's what he sold to you. But if he dies before me, the father says, if my son dies before me, then he never got control over the property. If he never got control of the property, he can't sell you something that he doesn't own. That's the problem over here. He's selling you something that he never owned. So you want to see it inside in Lashon HaRashbam. If you look at the top Rashbam, he says, "Avilu kishimota av acharkach shalom lo hayu ruim levodi deaben." They never were going to reach the son. El yachshu the shar yoshe av. This is what the Rashbam, which is unbelievable. The Rashbam believes over here that what will happen afterwards? They will go to the yoshe av. The inheritors of the av will take possession of the property. Umiu. If he didn't sell him in the lifetime of the Av, even if the man, the son predeceases the father, and then the father dies, that the Yoshe HaBen take effective control. Below Yoshe HaAv, and not the inheritors of the Av. When it comes to Mechira, he removed himself entirely from ownership at the time of the sale. And it never comes into his possession that he can become that the lokeach can actually get possession of it. Here, the Rishvan draws a distinction which is very important in Yerusha, that Yerusha works differently than a normal sale. I would say, okay, if I sell my property to someone, you have a buyer. If my son inherits me, I also have a quote-unquote buyer. He becomes the new owner of the property. That is not true. We saw this a little bit. The Rashbam formulated this a little bit. We saw this a couple of daf ago. That a morish is not, or yoresh, is not a buyer of the property or inheritor of the property. He steps into the shoes of the morish. He becomes like the morish himself. He takes over. He basically fills the shoes of the morish. In this case, right, what's going to happen? If he never sells it and he dies. If the son never sold the property and dies. Predeceases the father. So now all that happens is his son steps into the shoes of the father. When the son steps into the shoes of his father, he'll inherit the property from the grandfather because nothing changed over here. The father owns the payrot. The principal was with the son. That right was the yoresh. His son now took over, came in, stepped into his shoes, and basically remained the effective owner of the principal. So the principal never was released at any point in time. Because you had the son, after he dies, his son came along, the grandson came along, and stepped into his shoes, and it was never released. Therefore, the father could never take full ownership over the property. That's not true when the ben sells the property. When he sells the property, the lokeach does not step into his shoes. The lokeach can buy whatever rights the son owns. So what rights does the son own? The son owns nothing until his, or not completely anything, until his father passes away. When his father passes away, that's when he comes into... Yes. So this is all in Rabbi Yochanan. Right, that the lokeach is not able to take possession. Right, so now, the son sold it, and now the father dies. The lokeach comes and says, give it to me. So now we say, well, no, it's not yours. You know why? Number one, he sold it to you. When he sold it to you, he didn't have full ownership. The only way he could sell it to you is after the father dies. When the father dies, it didn't come into the son's possession. You know why it didn't come into the son's possession? Because he forfeited his right. How do we know he forfeited his right? Because he sold it while he was still alive. When he sold it, it means that he says, I'm releasing the principal. At this point in time, I'm releasing the principal in some sense. That's the way the Rashbam formulates it. I'm releasing the principal. If I release the principal, then the father becomes the total effective owner of the property. Because he has a kinyan aperot. Rashbam says that the father's The son's selling of the property says, I'm a saleik atzmo. He says, I'm removing my rights from the principal now, and I'm really granting it to someone else. The other someone else can never get those rights because it never comes to the ben, and everything reverts back to the father.
Like,
I absolutely hear what you're saying.
I'm saying, it was like, well, except the son's misaleik part,
right,
but not the thing that he was trying to accomplish by being misaleik.
So that's, Tosfos says, it suggests like you. Lo kana lokeach, second Tosfos here. He says, Perish Rivam, Yachzul Yoshea Ben. It means that the lokeach doesn't get it, exactly what you just suggested. If the lokeach doesn't get it, why should it go back to the father? It goes to the Yoshea Ben. I mean, that he was ineffective in effecting the sale. If he's ineffective in effecting the sale, then everything goes back to the status quo. The status quo is that the principal's owned by the son, the father owns the payroll, and if the son's not there, his son will take over. So the Rivam does exactly suggest, show what you're saying, is that it goes. Here you have a machlokes between the Rishbam and the Rivam about who it goes to when they say, Lokana Lokeach. According to the Rishbam, it goes to the Yoshe Ha'av. According to the Rivam, it goes to the Yoshe Ha'ben. Now, according to the Rivam, you have to explain why. So this is more along the lines. This is what we find in the, I think you find in the Shulchan Aruch and the Achronim around the Shulchan Aruch, why this is the case. And the explanation of this case, in the Ketzot and others, is that the form of ownership that a Kinyan Ha'Peirot and Kinyan Aguf, that a Kinyan Ha'Peirot grants some rights of Kinyan Aguf. That's what Rabbi Yochanan believes. He doesn't believe, even though the man owns a kinyan aguf here, nevertheless, the father's kinyan peirot grant him a kinyan aguf also in the karka, almost as if they're joint owners, for different parts of it. The man owns the principal, the father owns the principal to get his peirot out of there. So since they have joint ownership, the son does not have a full right to sell it until the father dies. So until the father dies, he can't sell it because he doesn't get full control over the principal. Once he gets full control over the principal, he can sell it. But if he never gets effective full control over the principal, he can't sell it. So that'll be the difference between whether he predeceases the father or not. If he predeceases the father, then he never ever got full control over the principal to sell it. And his son will come and say, I never sold it. I didn't want that. It's my property.
It should be his son's.
Right. It's his son's right now. I inherited my right to step into my father's shoes. I own half the principal. When my grandfather passes away, I get the full principal. Right. On the other hand, right, if the son is still alive, and when the son's still alive, he inherits from his father the full principal amount, and then the sale will go effective, and that's why it'll work. So the Rivam learns exactly like your question, Shol. Don't worry. So that's the machlokas here between the Rivam and the Rishbam in this case. So now, where it says, they already argued about this principle before. We saw this before. Which is, when it comes to mocher sadeh the payrot, person who buys a leasehold in a property for the production of the property, what is the din by bikurim? Does he have to bring the bikurim up? And can he korev parshat bikurim? So Yochanan Amar Meviv korev. He can bring the payroll and he reads parshat bikurim. Why? Because his leasehold on the property gives him a kinyan aguf in the karka. So therefore, he can say et demash and atatali, the land that you gave me, because he owns some land over here. The other hand, Reish Lakish says no. Meviv eno korev. He brings the fruits, but he doesn't read the parsha. Why? Because it's not a payroll. It's not that the mashin atatali. We'll see in a second. There's a machlokas about why it worked. Yochanan Amar Meviv korev kasaver kinyan payroll kinyan aguf dami. Reish Lakish Amar Meviv eno korev. Brings it, Kenyan Peirot, love Kenyan Gufdom, exact same Malchukas. So Amalacha Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan says, Afagav Duba Alma, Kenyan Peirot, Kenyan Gufdom, even though in general Kenyan Peirot is Kenyan Gufdom, Hocha Itzrich. Over here, by the case of the father and the son, I have to say it. Why? Sakadat Chamina, Abel Gabe Brei, Achuli Ochil. And when it comes to a father and a son, the father's mochel his rights. Even though generally a Kenyan Peirot will affect a Kenyan Guf, nevertheless, here the father is trying to give it over to his son. So over here will be Mochel's rights in the Kinyan Peirot to affect the Kinyan Aguf. And he'll grant all the rights to his son. That's what I would have thought. Kamash Malon, that's not the case over here. Very Shlakish, Amar Lecha, Afagav, the Ba'alma, Kinyan Peirot, Lavki, Kinyan Aguf, Dami, Ochoid Strich. Over here I need it. Sakadat Chamino, called Gabe Nafshei. When it comes to myself, I feel B'makom Brei, Nafshei Adifalei. When it comes in the face, in the case of Peirot, I'm buying from someone else. I'm buying the payroll from someone else. That someone else is not going to give up any rights over here, right? Because it's his best interest to keep the most rights possible. So therefore, I have no rights in the property. I only have a Kenyan payroll, and I can bring the bikurim. I can't say bikurim. But in the case of the father, in the case of the father over here, I would think that when the father grants it to the son, he says, listen, I granted my son if my son's around, but my son's not around, I'm going to retain the most rights possible. Well, how does he retain the most rights possible? By saying that Kenyan Peirot is Kenyan Aguf Dami. So I would think over here, maybe the father didn't relinquish his rights in the Kenyan Aguf. Kamash Malon, that I still say it's only a kinyan of peirot here, and there is no kinyan of guf even by the case of the father and the son. Now you could read it. The Rashbam goes through and does it all. You could read it both ways, meaning that you could say an itzrich for both sides. Whatever Rabbi Yochanan is saying would be the havamina for Reish Lakish, and whatever Rabbi Yosh Lakish is saying over here would be the havamina for Yochanan in the other case. And then you could say it. So you could read it either way. Is it right? It's implicit. That's why the Gemara doesn't say it, because you know by the fact that it says Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish that either one could have said either way, and therefore it's tzricha for the bikurim and it's tzricha for the case here by the son and the father. So now, why is it that you're maybe bikurim ve'enu kuret? So the Rashbam says an interesting thing over here. The Rashbam, which many disagree with him, he says she'enu yachol ikrot ha'adama asher natatali. You can't say the land that you granted to me. Umiu b'hava chayav. You still have to bring it. Why do you bring the payrot? Dichtev asher tavi me'artzecha. It says it that you bring from your land. Shari shibo lo yinikata karar the payrot. So the Rashbam claims that you have to bring the payrot me'artzecha. So it's enough to be artzecha in order to bring the, force you to bring the bikurim, but it's not enough to be hadamash natatali. So that's it. He just draws a distinction between hadamash natatali versus artzecha, your land. So now the Rashbam, Tosos jumps on him right away. It says, why should it be, why is there any distinction? If it's enough to be artzecha, it's enough to be an adamash natatali. It's not enough to be a adamash natatali, it's also not enough to be artzecha. So Tosos claims over here that that's simply midrabanan. You have to be maybe we bring the bikurim, it's all a din derabanan. Why are you not koreh? We had this Gemara earlier. There's two reasons why you wouldn't be koreh. Either because it mechzeh kishikra, looks like that you're lying, because we don't allow you to be koreh mikrei bikurim when you're not supposed to, because even though it's just psukim, nevertheless, we said before, the fact that you're standing, lifnai belief, you're standing up in the mikdash and the heichal, even though it's just reading psukim, you have to tell the truth. You have to be speaking the truth. So therefore, you can't do it. Or, the Gemara there also gave an alternative, is that we don't want you to think you're putter for your trumos and maisros. Because if you're chayv and bikurim, it's putter mitrumot and maisros. So Tosus over here says it's all a din derabanan that you're mevi, veino koret, that's all a din derabanan. And he rejects the Rashbam because he says it's you got to be consistent. The Ramban says it's simply a safik. We don't know. We don't know if it's enough, or Kenyan in here, it's enough to be called Adamash Natatali or Atzecha or not. And therefore he's Mevi, Veino Koreh, like any other Safek. When you have a Safek, you do the action, but you don't do the Kriyat Bikurim. Again, for the same reasons that the Tosfot will say, which is, we don't want you to read it either because Mechzek is Shikra, or because of, we want you to take up Chumot Masrot, me Safek also. So the first. It has the way you would in any other mitzvah. If you have a safek, you wouldn't make the brook as a mitzvah. Right over here, it's different, obviously, because there is no brook at the mitzvah, and it's just psukim. But nevertheless, the Gemara there gave two reasons why it still matters, either because of Chumot Masrot or because of Mechzek Kishikra. So the same, right, again, you will end up with the same effect of din, which is you do the maaseh without doing the dibur. So that's the way the Ramban explains it. So here you have three different interpretations. The Rashbam's interpretation, which is the difference between Adamash and Atatali versus Artzecha. They have the Tosfos' explanation, which is all Din Derabanan, and the Ramban, who says it's all Din Safek, Midin Safek. Now, there are those that explain the Rashbam in understanding that Artzecha versus Adamash and Atatali. Adamash here and Atatali is an indication of ownership and permanence. Adama asher natatali. And Adama means that the land which you granted to me. Nobody can say that about if you own a leasehold, that's not the land that was granted to you. Artzecha is not an indication of ownership, but rather an indication of artzecha means that the land gave you whatever was produced here. Artzecha means it's all of our land. I mean, Eretz Yisrael is the land of everyone. So artzecha means that the land produced, right? It granted you the fruits, right, that were produced here. And so that's the distinction that the Rashbam is drawing, and that you could explain the Rashbam in the face of Tosfos' questioning, is that the terms are different. Adamash Natatali indicates permanence. Artzecha is an indication of unika, of something that you, the land, you have enough ownership in the land to produce peirot. And that's what you do have. You do have that type of ownership here. That will be the distinction drawn over here. Three parties here. One, we'll call them 1, 2, and 3. Right, so Mr. 1 gets the property, and there's a remainder to us. Whatever happens after Mr. 1 goes to Mr. 2. And after Mr. 2 dies, it goes to Mr. 3. So 1, 2, and 3 here, that's the way he gives it, or that's the way he grants the property. Matrishon, so then if the first Mr. 1 dies, Kanashini, Mr. 2 gets it. Mecheni, after that, if Mr. 2 dies, then Kanashlishi, then Mr. 3 gets whatever's left over. So now the word says, Mecheni b'chaye rishon, if number 2, Mr. 2, dies before Mr. 1. then what do? Yachzru nechasim yorshei rishon. Then the property goes back to the, or remains with the first recipient. Why? Because how did number three, what was the entitlement of Mr. Three to the property was only through Mr. Two. And that the way the trust worked, the way the gift was granted, it goes Mr. One, whatever's left after Mr. One goes to Mr. Two, whatever's left for Mr. Two goes to Mr. Three. Now if Mr. Two is missing, Mr. Three can't get it, because Mr. One doesn't give it to Mr. Two for there to be Mr. Two to give it to Mr. Three. So Mr. Two, by the fact that there is no Mr. Two, it remains with Mr. One.
Using Lashon Yerusha here, didn't we say previously that he can't control that?
It's obviously not like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Okay, it's not like working like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. It's working like the Chachamim, who say that when you use the Matana and Yerushan, the same statement, that Matana governs and everything's a Matana here. So he used Matana in the first case, and then Yerusha, that everything is Matana.
Yeah, but we hold like Rabbi Yochanan
ben Broka. We do, Paschal, like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Right. All right, so now, here, so you have to say it's not Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka here, and that it's a case of Matana. That's what the Gemara said earlier, that was the case. All right, so now, the Gemara says, Vim ita, if you are right, Rish Lakish, the Yorshe notain, mi baile. It should go back to the original gifter or bequeather of the property. Why? Well, what do we have here? What does number one own? What does number two own? And what does number three own? The way it works here is that number one owns a kinyan peirut. He just owns a leasehold on the property until he dies. When he dies, the principal passes to Mr. Two. Mr. Two also only loans an leasehold. He owns all the peirut until he dies. When he dies, then the principal is granted number three, and number three owns the principal of the property. Now, the only way that he can get to the principal property is if it goes through Mr. Two. But all that Mr. One and Mr. Two own in the property is simply a kinyan peirut. Now, Mr. Two dies, and we're stuck. The property is stuck at Mr. One. So what does Mr. One own? A kinyan peirot. That's it. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, he says, no problem. He owns a kinyan peirot, and along with that kinyan peirot comes a kinyan aguf. So now, who keeps it? Number one keeps it, and his yorshim will keep it. I can make sense out of this, Bryson. According to you, Rish Lakish, who says a kinyan peirot is lav kinyan aguf dummy, then why does Mr. Rishon keep it? Why does Mr. One keep it? Mr. One, all he had was a kinyan peirot. That means who still has the principal ownership? Principal ownership remains with the gifter or the bequeather of the gift until it reaches number three. So it hasn't reached number three. It's never going to reach number three. So the gift should revert back. The principal should revert back to the original gifter and his yorshim. So the fact that it doesn't shows me that kinyan peirot is kinyan aguf dami. That's the question to Rish Lakish over here. So he says, v'im itel yorshei noten mi baile. According to you, Rish Lakish, go back to the gifter's yorshim, not number one's yorshim. Amar Leis, Rish Lakish responds, Bar Targma Reb Oshia, B'Bavel Acharecha, Shiny. That Reb Oshia already interpreted this in Bavel and explained this problem with this Brisa. He says that Acharecha Shiny. This terminology of using Nechsei Decha, right, or Acharecha, that term of Acharecha has a deeper meaning. It doesn't mean that you just have a Kinyan Peirot and then a Kinyan Aguf later on, but rather you have a Kinyan Peirot and a Kinyan Aguf. Rishon gets Kinyan Rif. Because the evidence of using Acharecha shows you that he gave full ownership to number one. This because Kenya, he gave him, granted him a Kenya to pay road, but he says whatever's left over will go to the Shani. What does that indicate? That indicates that number one has full control here. Full control to the extent that he could sell it. He could do anything he wants with it. That indicates that he has a Kenya to goof here. So that, the granting is not simply a Kenya to pay road, it's also granting him a Kenya to goof. And it's just whatever remains will go to the next party. Not that it is only a kinyan peirot all the way along till the third party. So Rish Lakish says that I agree in this case, or I admit to you in this case, that the kinyan peirot is kinyan aguf, but not because kinyan peirot is kinyan aguf, but because the gift indicates that there was not only a kinyan peirot, but also a kinyan aguf over here. Because he's saying whatever's left over will go to the other party. Well, whatever's left over means that you have a right to do whatever you want till it reaches the second party. It's over. Yeah, it's over. It's done. Exactly. We're going to see. That's the brayto that are coming up. There's a machlok the brayto in Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel. Exactly how that works. That we'll deal with tomorrow.